So, Ralph, what do you think about the recording?
Well, you know, it was kind of nice. But, you know.
I thought it was awesome.
Well, you know, as I said, that a little bit was kind of a snippet off the top of my head of some things that I've been thinking about based on the John 20:30 that Jesus said we would be doing greater works.
Gotcha.
And I just said, well, how can that be? And what are those greater works? And, you know, it seems like human nature that people of Jesus' day and our day, they want something spooky. You know, they were always asking Jesus for a sign. There
right.
was a miracle performed. They were looking for entertainment, and so were we. We want something spooky or a magic show. And, you know, Jesus wouldn't entertain them. Absolutely wouldn't. And the pinnacle of that was when he was taken before Herod. And he wouldn't even speak to them. He said, you know, don't cast your pearls before the swine. He just had contempt for them. They just wanted more entertainment in the show. Because Jesus was serious, and he responded to life's issues. And life is full of hardships and tragedies. And if you view it from the perspective of the hardships and tragedies, it's full of depression. And we find psychiatrists and psychologists thriving today on the backs of depression that is, you know, they call it clinical and try to treat it with drugs and this and that and the other. But it's really just attitudinal. And in Jesus' day, they were, as today, they wanted to be entertained with something unusual instead of God's normal love. And if you think about it, it goes all the way back to the Garden of Eden. I mean, those two had it good. Had direct communication with God every day and explored things. And it was kind of cool. And yet they wanted something different. They wanted something more, something spectacular. And they said, well, if we just eat from this tree, man, that's going to be, it's like a kid, like kids with a brand new drug. Wow, you know, the trip you go on with this one, let's do something new and exciting. Well, you know, that's not the purpose of works or greater works or miracles. Miracles are to show God's love for each and every creature on the earth. And the amazing things that he does daily and every hour of the day to protect and help and bless. And because he does so many of them, because his love is so extensive, we naturally take it for granted. And then we want something different. Well, Jesus did things that were spectacular just because they were unexpected. But said that we would do greater things because we were would become reoriented, transformed from seeking pleasure and entertainment to seeking to bless others through the power of Jesus. And he says, if you seek to do that, you will not seek in vain because God will use you to do whatever he wants to do on this earth. And people will be blessed. And you'll do it so frequently and that it'll seem ordinary and people will take it for granted and then they'll turn around and want something exciting, exotic, and not from God. Back to the Garden of Eden. But I think that people, just in their normal lives, serving each other, because that's the system that God set up. And as long as we abide by it, we are doing God's work. And the fact that we can do God's work, we who have really very little talent can do God's work, that's a miracle.
Right.
But because it's a miracle we see every day, we're not excited by that. It's like a newspaper that, you know, will not publish a story about something that happens every day because it's not news. They'll only publish that which is bad news. And we just get inundated in bad news and wind up depressed.
Huh.
But miracles of God's blessing are happening, you know, all around us. And our country looks like it's in pretty sad state, but it's being blessed.
All right.
We've got a pandemic of obesity, not starvation.
Right. Right.
So, you know, our cup's more than half full, but we're looking at it as half empty. So,
it's interesting because the number.
We need to take a different view and see God at work in everything, in everybody, all day long. And look at people as the channels of God's mercy and creativity and love. And if they're not living up to that, then that's an opportunity to somehow turn them on to what God could do in and through them.
Right. So did you write this?
Yeah.
Can I share it with others?
Yeah, if you like.
Okay. Would you like it to be driven back to, do you personally have a website?
Just the one I have on C12.
Okay. Gotcha. Well, this is really cool. this is really cool.
I use that as a little devotional when we had our annual C12 banquet just for my members, because, you know, as an entrepreneur, you can very easily get to the point where your cup's half empty because you have enough disasters in a day to cope with. And the guy who's at where the buck stops is always dealing with the unpleasantness of the business, doesn't get a whole lot of chance to deal with the positives. But so every now and again, they need to see the big picture of what God is really doing through them, through their industry to serve people. And take a new look at the opportunities God's given them to bless a whole lot of people.
Right. Right. Nice. Nice. Any other thoughts that you have?
Well, I kind of live in that area because that's where God has me. I'm doing a Bible study series starting tonight. Again, I'm going to use right now videos. There's about six of them in there called Work as Worship, which to a great many people are eye-opener because they don't see their work as worship, and therefore they miss the vast majority of what God is seeking to do through them. It's a thing that is on Right Now Media. This particular one is done by, I think it's J.D. Greer, a pastor in North Carolina. And it's got a bunch of case studies on people in their work and how they have seen God use them in their work to do his work. Puts a whole new joy in work.
Right. So thanks for sharing last week. That was really cool. I love, too, when you said, so Mark, what are you going to do with this?
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, what can I do with this? What can I do? I could do this and I could do this. So put it into our media team. And I said, hey,
Well, they did what they did very well.
Yeah, I thought so. I was like, wow. I mean, and so then I said, so then I'm like, okay, because what you need in today's society is you need something that's, I don't know, a minute or two, because that's all people will give you.
Yeah, that's true.
And then if you can grab them with a minute or two,
yeah,
then what you do is then you can say, well, there's something more.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, this paper that you did, that's really cool because now there's something more.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, this is awesome. And so the plan is I've got, I think, about 350 to 400 Christian business owners in my database. And so I'm going to get it out to them. And then a number of those in my database and any of our clients that are Christians, we encourage them to go ahead and, to get it out to their database.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's, I don't know how many thousands of people there are there. And then the toughest crowd of them all, I think CPN, Christian Professional Network, I think that they have a database of over 100,000 pastors, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And so then they'll probably, CPN will probably get that video out probably 5 or 10,000 to kind of see. And then once it gets out to the 5 or 10,000, get the right messaging and all of that kind of stuff. And then once that happens, then it can go ahead and expand from there. So it's interesting to me, I went to my nephew's wedding. My oldest brother's son got married this weekend, so went out to Des Moines, Iowa area, and you know, I've kind of in anticipation of the August 1st, I'm really focused in on leadership, and the sermon on Sunday was from 1 Corinthians. What was it? 1 Corinthians 4. And so I kind of pulled from that for leadership, the three S's to leadership: be a servant, be a great steward, and be steadfast. Uh-huh. And so, you know, my oldest brother, he's a CPA and has a very successful practice, and he's now starting to buy companies, and he's buying companies, and then he's finding those in their 20s and 30s to run them.
Uh-huh.
And
kind of companies?
He buys all kinds of companies, and so one of his largest client, his largest CPA client, is in manufacturing, dye making and stuff, automotive, big plastics and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
And so he's helped buy I don't know how many companies. They were working on a company based over in Europe, and I think it was a $2 or $3 billion company that they almost bought. His own companies that he's buying, he's got one company that does what is it? Some type of industrial, like heating and air conditioning, I think, and that's based out of Ohio. And my youngest brother is running that company. My oldest brother and my other brother bought the company, and then my youngest brother, he's running it. And then they bought another company. They bought another company, and it's in, I think it's in something in pollution. And so he's, you know, he buys, he has this model, this formula that he's figured out. And so he'll buy any company. So they're looking at a whole bunch of different companies now. And so he's done very, very well, and he's lived in the same home he's been in from when he first got married, you know, 30 years ago. And so they've lived very frugally and done well. And so, and then my younger brother, he's in the Marines for 22 years, and he's done very well. He owns his own company now on the East Coast out in the D.C. area. He does technology. And so he's done very, very well financially. And I got to think, has worked for Lucent Technology, AT&T mobile accounts all around the world. And so he's done very, very well. And so all three of those guys are in a position financially where they could go and do, like, full-time ministry. Like, you know, like, they could, and there's things I could see all three of them doing, and they're all three interested, especially my oldest brother and the guy from Lucent. But the guy from Lucent, he's been there for, I don't know, 35 years probably. Well, you know, his whole career, so maybe it's been 40. So he's been there, and he said, I said something about, well, you know, about ministry and you know, your workplace being your ministry. He's like, huh, yeah, I've never thought of it that way. And then
you ought to run the just the numbers part of we do a seminar called Strategic Plan for Ministry, because business people realize that where you have no strategy and no plan, you can't expect anything to happen.
a lot of them, in terms of ministry, they kind of expect that just to happen, but everything else they plan. And the starting point for a strategic plan for ministry, I can give you in a capsule, is take a little test and add up the people which really is your sphere of influence. And you start by adding up all the employees that you lead. You add to that all the customers you serve. Add to that all the suppliers that serve you and are vying for your attention in business, including your bankers. And then add to that all your stockholders or owners. Add that all together, and each of those has an opinion. If I would to ask any one of them, what do you think of so-and-so, who is the leader of the company, they would have an opinion. And it would be good or bad. It would be more informed or less informed. But they would all, to answer my question, they would all have an opinion, which means that those are the people you have an influence with, either for good or for bad. Those are the people who you are witnessing to every day, and some of them seem to know what you're deciding to do before you even decide to do it. And then the next question is, okay, what are you doing with that influence that would be a benefit to them and to the kingdom? Are you doing anything that would help them and give them a good opinion? Were you doing anything that would lead them to Christ? Or if they know the Lord, lead them to a closer walk with Him? And if not, why in the world do you think God put you in the position to have that influence? Or are you just taking that for granted and running off and trying to do something else that excites you?
So, like I've taken, you know, a fair number of risks, you know, a lot of risk over the years. And so I'm pretty comfortable, I guess, with that. It's like, I don't know if I like it, but it's, you know, that's, you know, whatever. And so, like, for me to make this jump in August, you know, like humanly, it doesn't make any sense.
So, what are you going to do in August? What's the challenge?
Well, what am I going to do, or what's the challenge?
Both.
Well, what am I going to do? Is it's like, you know, I love what I do. I mean, I love talking to people about business and putting systems in place, and it's like I love that. I mean, that is so fun. That is so exciting. But, you know, I mean, every business person on the planet, you know, every business person on the planet, or every Christian business person on the planet should go ahead and hear, you know, that short video of a miracle. I mean, it'll transform their lives. Like with me, I'm like, I get that. I understand it. I'm like, but I hadn't thought of it that way before. I'm like, wow, that's really cool. I get that. But most people have never even thought of it. And it's like, I never even considered it. And so what I should be doing is I think, for sure, you know, I should be putting my time, rather than helping, you know, a business here, a business owner there, a group of business people, I should be, you know, I should be taking that message that you have and I should be getting it like all over the world. And then, you know, and then a little tweak of that message, I think. Maybe not. I don't know. I have to look at it. Like, if I look at it through the eyes of a Christian business owner, I see one thing. But if I look at it through the eyes of a non-Christian business owner, what would I, well, if I was not a Christian, if I didn't have the belief system, if I looked at that video, what would I think?
Well, that's quite true. You know, a non-Christian business owner is, a lot of them are in that, our culture says it's a game. They're really in a casino, and they love the risk, and they don't see the opportunity. They understand that if they don't have a solution for the problems of a group of people that they can sell to those people, they don't have a business. So they really, at some point, have to be focused on doing something for people that people want done, which is other-focused. They have to have some amount of altruism, or they just can't do it. So their basic motive may be just to get, make money. But if they totally ignore the factor of service to other people, they're not going to make money. And most people, secular or Christian, know that. And so there's a basic motive of service. And if you get to the business owner, when you talk seriously, he realizes that he has very little control compared to what he would like to have. And the non-Christian will say, well, you got to have a lot of luck. The Christian would put that entirely differently. But they're talking about the same thing, is the good fortune, the good success that they can't create for themselves because they don't have that level of control. Therefore, they're trusting in grace, although they don't know the word and they don't understand the concept of grace, but that's what they're looking for. So I think the business owner, the entrepreneur, is pretty well equipped by God to come into an understanding of the basic gospel facts of grace, unmerited favor, looking for positive results, looking to accomplish through themselves and through others that which seems impossible. There are people who basically believe in miracles but don't really fully understand the definition or haven't come up with a definition of their own. So whether they're secular or Christian, they're dealing with the same thing. They're really dealing with co-laboring with God, even though they don't know how to interpret that.
So that's what I should be, see, that's what I should be getting out, and I should be getting that message out to, like, every business person in the world.
And for the Christian, actually, what I gave you is just, it's my interpretation of the entrepreneur's role in co-laboring with God.
But the co-laboring is a bigger picture because there are other roles for other types of people. And, you know, long before I did this, I did another one called Co-Laboring with God in His Kingdom.
You did a paper?
Yeah.
Can you get me that?
Yeah, I can send it to you if you want. But among other things, I said, well, if you're a Christian, and even a lot of nominal Christians and non-Christians have learned the Lord's Prayer. And you go through that and ask yourself, okay, there's a bunch of petitions in there. What? How would God do this? If God chose to answer this prayer, how would He do this? Give us this day our daily bread. How would God do this in my community? How does He do this? You know, at one time, for His people, He just dropped it from heaven, but only for a short period, for a specific purpose. All the rest of the time, He does it through people. How does He do this? Are those people co-laboring with God in some particular way? How does God run a complex society? And, you know, what would happen if He stopped doing that? What would we look like if all the structures that are in place for you and I to buy a loaf of bread or a piece of bacon or whatever were to fall away? We would look like a hunter-gatherer society, of which there's still many in the world. We consider that poverty and benighted and this, that, and the other. Maybe it is or maybe it isn't, but it would certainly change people, change things, and I'm not sure that too many people would like that change. In other words, God is spreading His blessings far and wide, and we take them for granted. And so I'll run through, if you are co-laboring or want to co-labor, you got to go back to the source and say, okay, what is God doing in my industry? Well, how does He use my industry? And if my industry suddenly were to cease, no longer exist, what would be the effect on people? And so how does my work tie into what God's doing? And it's not just business, because it's the church, it's education, it's entertainment. Whatever field you're in, God is using that in His own way to create His own desires, which are a blessing to people. And correspondingly, Satan desires to use each and every one of them to accomplish his ends. So if I know what God's purpose is, and I think about what Satan's purpose might be, maybe I'll eventually come to the conclusion which side I'm on in terms of what I do and my attitudes and the purpose of my work.
Right.
It puts a little bit of your perspective on what you do, whether you're a doctor, an educator, pastor, or whatever you do, to kind of figure out why God established this.
Right.
So that's kind of where the whole concept comes from, and as you can see, the entrepreneurial part of it is where I've lived in business ownership and leadership, is just the piece that I gave you.
Well, if you have, yeah, anything you've got, Ralph, you know, I'll consume it. I mean, I'll just, I eat this kind of stuff up. I mean, because, you know, why reinvent the wheel? I mean, if somebody's gone through and taken a life and figured this stuff out and how to communicate and articulate it to people where people understand it. And so, you know, that's what I should be doing full time. I mean, I should be helping a lot of people in a big, big way, you know, to see and do and understand things that are at the very heart of who they are, who God created them to be. And so the biggest hindrance that's potentially holding back is the company is not in a position, doesn't, from man's perspective, it doesn't seem like it's in a position to go ahead and run without me. And so, you know, I would be putting my family, the company, everything at risk.
Uh-huh.
And to me, that's like, that sounds like a God thing going on.
You got to look at what God has you doing and what responsibilities He has for you. He can always rip that all away from you. And you know, I've had times in my life where the Lord has clearly shown that He's shutting doors and wanted me to sell my company and this, that, and the other. But that's not the normal mode of operation. Normally, He uses the things that He's put you in. To accomplish a greater work than what you normally understand.
Right. Right. So, I don't know. It's just very intriguing. Very intriguing. Any other thoughts or questions?
No. I'll send you this other thing and you can take a look at it. See if it has an interest for you.
Yeah. Like I said, anything you or your mom, like your mom, it just... I can't even tell you how much she has helped me through you. I mean, this weekend I told, I don't know, 10 people about what your mom said about the biggest challenges of getting old, you know, you're lazy. So, you know, I can't, as a 50-year-old, I can't say that to a 70, 80, or 90-year-old. I can't say that because immediately, well, Mark, you don't understand. But your mom, she said it. So it's like her gifts, you know, her gifts, like her legacy continues to expand and grow. And it gives people freedom. Like my mom, I mean, it seems like it's starting to kick in. And I told her, I said, hey, Mom. You know, she's like, well, you don't understand. You know, you don't understand what it's like getting old. I'm like, Mom, you know, I said, you know, 5 people that have said getting old is terrible. I know Ralph Miller. He's not, you know, he's engaged. He's this. And I said, so, you know, I don't know, Mom, what's normal. You know, I don't know what's normal in getting old. If it's normal to be a complainer and not be happy and not be joyful and not be a contributor, if that's normal, which I don't know if it is, but if it is, don't be normal. Why would you want to be normal in that situation?
Well, Mark, what's normal for a teenager?
Right.
You want that to continue?
I did tell her and my dad, I'm like, Mom, I'm like, Mom, you feel like one of my kids, one of my teenagers. You're like complaining, and you're not happy, and you're this, and you know, you don't understand, and you know, it's like everything that comes out of your mouth is like one of my kids.
Yeah, well, you know, part of that, you know, there are symptoms and there are root attitudes, as we all know. And a part of that is we go through phases where we lack the attitude of gratitude. And, you know, teenagers tend to be their most unattractive when at the bottom is the lack of an attitude of gratitude. And we actually see that in our teenagers, because often the most advantaged, the most born with a silver spoon, have the disease the worst. It's a self-pity, it's a negativity that just affects the whole family when it begins to happen. It doesn't matter what age. And, you know, as we get older and we lose some of our enthusiasm, we take more and more for granted, and we lose that excitement, and life gets a little boring maybe, we kind of get despondent and see this as something happening to us rather than something that we're doing to ourselves. And the reason we do it to ourselves is because we have probably refused to step out of our comfort zone for a while, and God's always pushing us out of our comfort zone. And at a certain point we say, I'm too old for that. And at that point, you're slated for a road that gets increasingly boring, mundane, and pretty soon you lose the attitude of gratitude, adopt one of self-pity or self-indulgence. And that's always the temptation at any age, but it's probably the biggest temptation as you get older. And you either give in to it and it's deadly, or you periodically grab yourself by the scruff of the neck and say, ain't having no pity party today, let's get on with it. And, you know, that's kind of, it doesn't matter what your age is, you got to do that to yourself. And hey, teenagers have parents that will grab them by the scruff of the neck and do that. As we get older, the problem is we don't have anybody to do it to us, and by that time we've got to learn to do it to ourselves. So, and short of that, you know, the next step is depression, and the next step after that is ill health, and, you know, that's not a necessary way to end. My mother had plenty of faults. She was controlling, liked to control the world, and the world jumped to her command, but she maintained the same discipline on herself that she did on other people. So that kind of spared her and allowed her to mellow in her
old age where she was spending more of her energies disciplining herself than other people.
And how old was she?
Well, she lived to 97, and she was still actively on the board of the nonprofit she started at 97, and lining people up and telling them they had to give, and, you know, this, that, and the other, making sure things were done properly and in order and what have you, and she was still spending her winters in Barbados and her summers in Bavaria, and had her cycle and her friends each place. And of course, her friends, decade by decade, got younger and younger. I was way older than most of her friends by the time she died. And she had an odd way of talking sometimes.
What do you mean?
She says, "Oh, my friends are so boring. They keep dying." Okay. Well, you know, but she had a discipline. I'm sure you've done some writing. Writing is hard work. And she spent 2 or 3 hours every day writing till, a week or so before she died.
What about your dad?
That's a discipline.
Yeah. What about your dad?
My dad died at the early age of 56. So he wasn't around for most of her life.
Did your mom remarry?
No.
How long were they married?
They were married for 27 years.
Huh. So what was he like?
Very intelligent, and kind of reserved. And I didn't know him all that well.
Why not?
Well, because he died by the he died when he was so young. I was way in flight training when he died.
Okay.
And he was away during the war, and I just never saw a whole lot of him.
Huh.
I went away to boarding school, and
well, I appreciate your time and your sharing and the impact and the sharing of the video. I can't wait to get that out to a lot of people, and then the white paper you put together on it. You know, that's really cool. And so I appreciate it.
Okay, my friend.
All right, I appreciate it. Thank you, Ralph.
All right.
Okay, bye.